Hi there, my name is Heather Chitrangelo. I created Systemic Renewal, and I firmly believe that no one and no situation is ever too far gone. Well, welcome back everyone to Never Too Far Gone. This is Heather Chitrangelo, and I'm really excited to be sharing this episode with you, an interview with Ignacio Paca, the Executive Director of Initiatives of Change Co-Foundation. Ignacio spoke with me about his own experience of global leadership and some really key areas where we are seeing a transition away from an old style of leadership into a new style of leadership for a new world. So today's podcast is part of an 8-part series called Transition Plans, How to Transition Well. And this fifth episode really focuses in on transitioning leadership style within organizations and globally. Ignacio Paca was appointed as Executive Director of the Co-Initiatives of Change Foundation in May 2023. Until March 2023, he served as Executive Director of ICFA, the Global Consortium of Humanitarian NGOs. ICFA is a global network of non-governmental organizations whose mission is to make humanitarian action more principled and effective by working collectively and independently to influence policy and practice. Ignacio has over 30 years of experience in humanitarian work and development issues. He served a 5-year term as Secretary General at the Terre des Hommes International Federation. He previously worked for the Terre des Hommes Foundation, the Swiss Tropical Institute, the European Association for Development and Health, Medecins Sans Frontières, KPMG, and the European Bank for Latin America. He is an expert on human rights and social issues. He has been strongly engaged in global advocacy on protection frameworks for migrants and refugees, with a particular focus on children and youth. Passionate for long-distance challenges, he is also an enthusiastic ultra-trail runner. So this conversation with Ignacio traversed three types of transition we are seeing in global leadership today. First, a transition from cynical or naively optimistic leadership into a much more grounded middle ground, proactive choice to be hopeful. The second transition is one away from assertive management styles to choosing vulnerability. And third, a transition away from blind acceptance of white privilege, male privilege, towards conscious decisions to choose diversity in leadership representation. So as you listen to today's podcast, I encourage you to consider three questions for your own reflection time throughout the week. First, what does choosing hope look like for you right now? Second, how could you take another step towards choosing vulnerability as a leader? What struggle or change of mindset or apology might you communicate with your team before the year is out? And third, what steps could be taken right now to choose diverse representation for upcoming events and appointments where you are involved in selection or are invited to participate? As always, I love to hear your feedback and what discoveries have been meaningful for you as you engage with this podcast. So do reach out to me anytime and share. But for now, please welcome to the stage, Ignacio Paca. Well, you know, I was thinking just to start that you have such extensive experience with so many humanitarian groups, communities from all around the world, and now you're at Co-Initiatives of Change. And I was wondering, so far as you've been in this role for, I think it's a year now, if I'm right,
that's right.
What do you think is special or unique about the contribution that Co-Initiatives of Change is making to the humanitarian sector?
Well, I would say it's very much its contribution on helping individuals to experience things, to transform, for this individual transformation to be able to help for a more collective transformation. I'm enjoying entering into this organization because it's much more around the how you do things than the what. They're complementary, of course, but there's a lot of how we do things. and coming from how individually we do transform, we do change for our organizations or our environment to change as well.
Do you think there's a sense in which some organizations or groups really specialize in the how and others really specialize more in the what, and there's almost a partnering that can happen there?
Well, absolutely, but the how has to be in all organizations for sure. But I think it's good to mention, for instance, how the Sustainable Development Goals, which were adopted in 2015, which are ambitious but extraordinary commitments and targets to have a more prosperous humanity and peaceful. And I was at the Sustainable Development Goals Summit in New York in last September at the UN General Assembly. And of course, the different governments would be saying that we're backtracking. Everybody's saying that we're backtracking on the expected achievements of the SDGs as we're halfway through to 2030. And the reasons that are given is because of the COVID, the climate change, the different wars, and all that is, of course, a reason and very valid. But one of the aspects that perhaps we're not paying sufficient attention is exactly that on the how, and it's on the inner development which is needed to accompany the big changes of the Sustainable Development Goals. We tend to look at complex issues and, for instance, the complex global issues and try to give more technical answers to this. So we do find ourselves with many technical indicators and targets, which are, of course, needed, but we're paying insufficient attention on the how and on very much on the inner development. The inner development goals exist. It's a framework of 22 skills and qualities which are needed to accompany how we do things, the what. It's when the SDGs, the Sustainable Development Goals, would meet the IDGs, the Inner Development Goals, that we would have an extraordinary combination to make really a fast progress. The blind spot is our inner growth.
Yeah, and I know that co-initiatives of change are partnering with the Inner Development Goals as an organization and hosting them at Co this year, which is really exciting. I guess straight off the bat, I'm thinking that for a lot of people, perhaps this concept that inner development and practical technical solutions to serious, urgent global problems sounds a little bit too philosophical or kind of a nice idea, but is it really a good use of time? And I'm the person that's already sold, because as you know, that's a big part of my own work and that's a big part of what drew me to Co in the first place. But for the person that's not sold on this, maybe we can unpack your own experience of how these journeys connect a little bit. For whoever's listening to this podcast right now, who might be thinking, what's the point of sitting in circles talking and listening to our inner voice when really people are starving and people are in immediate danger and, you know, there are serious pressing climate change issues that need technical solutions and so on. So can you think of, for yourself, Ignacio, an experience you've had where an inner change happened for you that was, or an inner transition happened for you that was really significant in terms of your leadership or your practice or how you approach global issues?
Yeah, well, there's so many, you know, Heather, because I think the transitions in who we are to go to who we truly are, they're natural, they're ongoing part of life. But of course, there are some instances that I can really identify as key moments. But if not, I mean, it's everyday work, and it needs, of course, a certain amount of courage, I would say, certainly curiosity and the self-compassion. That's one I really struggle a lot with, you know.
Really?
But
that's very honest. You don't hear many people say, I struggle with compassion. Plenty of people say, I struggle with courage, but nobody admits they struggle with compassion. What do you mean by that? You mean you just don't care about people?
No, I meant the self-compassion.
Oh, self-compassion.
Yes.
Okay. Well, you know, but we're laughing, but that's important, isn't it?
Well, yes. There's so many things one has to work on, you know, and it's never ending, and that's why it's also exciting. It's really difficult to get to this deep understanding of who we truly are, and it never ends, and it, of course, it needs humility, and I would say that the type of leadership that I try to provide is one also where I hope I offer humility. I hope I offer also compassion, and that's why it was really my being compassionate to myself, which I'm struggling with. But to go back to your question of one key moment, and on global issues, 10 years ago, I was really privileged of being in a group of about 20 people for 5 days. It was a kind of retreat in Val de Consolation in France, in an extraordinary place. And it was to discuss environmental leadership. And during those 5 days, we discussed different experiences and views of how as leaders we should be promoting environmental sustainability. So this is 10 years ago. And this group, it was a priest, a rabbi, a pujari. I think there were two imams, a pastor, and there were other ministers. And yes, also a shaman from traditional indigenous society of the Amazon. So all leaders and keepers of the sacred law and tradition of their religions. And then there were a few experts on environmental issues, and then a few others, which I was very privileged of being part of. But I did struggle in the others.
Okay. You're not a religious...
not a religious leader, no.
That's not so funny, because most religious leaders, they find themselves in that category in most rooms. Why are you here?
Well, in the category of the others.
I think, often when if I attend events as a religious leader or a faith representative, I'm often the odd one out in the room. You know, there are government officials, leaders in private sector, people with economic experience, psychologists, you know, there are artists even, but then, this is one of the faith leaders, you know, we're an add-on, and often there's a bit of a strange question mark in the air. Why are you here? What's your role in this day and age? And so you found yourself in an environment that was the opposite, which I'm fascinated by. Wow, how did that feel?
Yes.
And the minority.
Yes. I did really struggle. I struggled during the two first days, because you had these people from the environment sector. So this is back in 2015. And the experts in this group, they didn't wait for the 2021 IPCC report to say that there is no chance of undoing the damage which was already caused by global warming. And they were saying, and it's going to get worse, you know? And there's, yes, and then there's, of course, there's nowhere to run. It's a global issue. And I perhaps it impacted me to hear these experts talk about it in this way. I knew there were issues around the environment, but I hadn't had the same awareness as I do have now. This was 10 years ago. And then you have all these pastors and these ministers and the imam and the priest with self-reflection and embracing the news and looking for the seeking the support and very open-minded. And I was going, hey, wait a second, we're on a burning platform and so on. And this is terrible. And with their experience, they were saying, well, no, we have to work on hope and new energy. And then to make it short, at the end of those 5 days, it made it much, much more clearer to me that with the correct mix of voices, of ambition, the right type of leadership, but also that needed spirituality that so many of our societies are so much losing, well, then nothing is impossible. And this is a very big choice I made there. I said, I'm not going to enter into the cynicism. I'm going to enter into hope. And even if you hear the experts and so on, said, we have to fight for it. And we really do. And the element of bringing back elements of individual consciousness and to bring the collective consciousness, all that question of nothing is impossible if we really work on our inner growth to have the impact around us. And that's where I'd say things flipped from I'd want to be in the group of the people that are thinking in a cynical way. I want to be in the group of the people that are not putting their head in the sand as an ostrich, but are looking at the hope and putting energy to be able to contribute to this ambition that we can get out of this major global threat around the climate change and more generally the environmental issues.
Yeah, it's so powerful. I remember you saying to me, we have to focus on the light, not the darkness, and we have to choose hope.
Yeah.
That's your mantra. Yeah. And I suppose there are two ends of that spectrum, and you're describing a middle ground. You know, there's the kind of cynical abyss of purely looking at technical solutions but becoming very depressed at the state of the progress and the pace of change. Or there's a kind of, you said, bury your head in the sand. Some birds outside just suddenly became very loud here. Or there's that burying the head in the sand kind of overemphasis on perhaps spirituality or mentality or mindset change without really putting our hand to technical solutions. But then you're describing this middle ground of saying we're going to actively choose hope, actively choose to be proactive, but from a particular mindset. I feel like you're describing a middle ground that's bringing those two worlds together. And I mean, in a sense, why did the scientific solutions and the psychological, or you could say spiritual solutions, the mindset change, when did they ever become so separate anyway, you know?
Why were they separate? I don't know, Heather, but it's again perhaps the type of question that of course can help to reflect on how to change, but I think it's more settling in what you've called a bit the middle ground and at least a ground of hope, and to reinforce that. And as as a leader, because I've had the privilege of leading several organizations, and I've had a lot of pleasure of doing that. And my previous job being at the head of ICVA, which is the global network of humanitarian NGOs, which was an extraordinary experience, and on which I learned a lot, and we're working with a tremendous team. I tried to share a certain style of leadership, which I have observed and been inspired by different people, and certainly someone like Jacinda Ardern, for me, has been, from where I was sitting and on the international level, really a role model. She was the youngest female head of government in the world. She became prime minister at the age of 37. She gave birth. The way at least I observed, or many of us observed her style of leadership, but of course we're not New Zealanders, so we're not in the country. But the way she brought New Zealand through the COVID pandemic, the recession, there was also the Christchurch mosque shootings. She also had the volcanic eruption, and then the way she leaves with this address in Parliament, with my tank is empty. And I thought this is also at least someone who came out as, for me, as using her power of kindness and empathy to change ways of governing, of leading. And certainly I try as much as possible to use this power of kindness, but remaining a manager, and when difficult decisions have to be taken, well, I will be there to take the difficult decisions, but with the empathy to look at changing our ways of relating to others. And this is very different to what I was brought up with. I mean, I did business management, so, and I was taught at the business school that leadership was about being assertive and strong, and there are certainly other qualities that leaders have to show. I was also brought up saying boys don't cry, but I do show my emotions. I do not hide them. I have cried in front of my teams and so on, and that, I think that is important, because the type of positions that we have in leading organizations, we have to show that we are human. We are suffering and getting joy also from our jobs. But we don't always have to be assertive. We have to manage to express our doubts, to say we don't know when we don't know. And really show that we're all on this and we're all learning. And I think I really believe that then gives confidence to a team and builds winning teams, or the dream teams that we hope to have to move things.
And how have you found crying in front of your team, or saying, I don't know the answer to that? How do you find it's received?
Well, I do believe that it's received, that, well, yes, he's like all of us, no? It's not because you're in a leadership position that you don't get hurt by things, that you don't have your doubts. I think it's just I hope an inspiration that we all have to work to have the deeper understanding of who we truly are and to be honest in showing it. I mean, the world is made with so many false pretenses, with so many lies and so on, that bring it back to the honesty and to who we truly are seems to me essential in building relationships with others. And of course, not easy at all.
Not easy at all. I often think that in all the different leadership roles that I've been in, the moments that I've made the most progress with people having trust with me and being in a place of trust and really progressing with vision have actually been on the days that I have said, I'm sorry, or I've had to apologize for making a mistake. That it actually fast tracks the relationship much more than all the times I got it right and was very impressive. And I find that's such an interesting observation that, you know, I think the way I earn trust is by being impressive. And in a sense, people need to see competence, but I have personally just found that admitting I'm wrong and especially saying sorry, and I'm going to learn from that when I've had to do that. I never liked doing it, but it actually seems to often be the most creative moment in working with a person or with a team.
Yeah. Yes. And I believe as leaders, this has snowball effects and it changes the cultures of organizations. The fact also of defining values in an organization and working with a team around the values. But then you have to align with these values and you have to align with one's own values too. And I think as a leader, perhaps, I mean, there are a few things that happened to me when I look back, I think were triggered also trust and perhaps a certain culture of, or contributed to a change of culture. One of them is around how, I mean, diversity in teams is so important, but also to be able to act when you don't find the needed diversity. And on several occasions, I have refused to be on speaking roles because I didn't think it was appropriate for it, again, to be a white 50 or 60 year old man to be in the speaking role. And I do recall once that I was invited to Rome to speak on migration issues, and I arrived late in the evening, worked that evening until early morning, not early morning, but a few hours. I went to bed late, preparing a few notes of how best to address the issues I wanted to share. And then I got to the venue place, sat on the panel, and then looked around me, and actually I was probably the youngest, and they were all men. And I said, well, no, I can't speak here. So when the moderator offered me to speak, I got off and left the panel. And then said to the audience, I asked them, do you believe that wherever and whenever you have to align your values to what you're doing? People were very surprised looking at me. No? And I said, well, I'm leaving the panel, and I will not share what I wanted to share with you. But I would offer my space to someone else in the audience. Someone who's a woman and with an experience of migration. And I'd put on a little card, 7 minutes, and someone raised a hand and gave it. And what happened there is that the moderator offered me an incredible opportunity, and because he said, ah, yes, down with men. And wow. So then really I probably used the 7 minutes, but to lecture about gender balance and about diversity. And that was a few years ago, and some people still remind me of how that happened, and that certainly just after that, some people didn't come to speak to me. I went to the organizers and explained it to them, of course, but I did have from other people very much words of appreciation. And I think as leaders, these are important moments to show what real leadership is. We're in positions of privilege and power, and we have to use these positions of privilege and power in the best way possible, also to change, to align the values to what we say we want to do, yeah, what we're doing rather. Sorry.
The Academy of Systemic Renewal is based in Melbourne, and so we acknowledge the traditional custodians of the land on which we meet, the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation, and we pay respects to elders past, present, and emerging.